And on the grounds of a fair at the park in Mellon Park and Shadyside is my friend and our Director of Education and Outreach, Jeff Barron. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. How do things look out there?
Oh, beautiful. It's a beautiful day here on the grounds of the old R.B. Mellon Estate. We're excited for a day of art and music, and I'm here with the organizer, Katie Horowitz, Squirrel Hill native. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning.
Katie, so this is your third year. Can you tell us what's happening today and maybe how things might be a little bit different this year?
Sure. Today we have lots and lots of great entertainment and artists. We have four different concerts throughout the day today. The Harlan Twins will be playing this afternoon at 4. Machete will play at 5:30. The RH Factors at noon. And one other show that I'm just forgetting off the top of my head. It is Race the Ghost is at 2. So they're all great local bands. There are children's activities going on. The Children's Museum will be here. And the Center for the Arts is doing some mask making over there. And, of course, all the artists are here. We've got 103 booths this year. Lots of new faces and lots of faces that have been coming for 15, 20, 25 years. So,
well, that's really great. So you must have, since you grew up right around the neighborhood, you must have came here as a kid, right?
Yeah, I sure did. Yep, I remember it well. I remember climbing on the rock wall over by the stairs and walking around to all the art. Yeah, I remember it well from when I was a kid, definitely.
Well, it's great. It's good to have somebody with such a long history involved now as the organizer. This is my third year covering it, and I've seen you, and it's great to be here. It's a beautiful day. Like I said, we're here on the corner of Fifth Avenue and Shady, the old grounds of the R.B. Mellon Estate. And I'm going to take some to talk to some of the artists throughout the day and maybe check in with you a little bit later, Kate. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right, Larry, that's the scene. The scene is set here at a fair in the park.
Thanks. And Jeff, as you look around, the festival just opened at 10 o'clock. And how are the crowds? I'm sure probably it's, as always, very laid back and relaxed, lots of aisle space amongst the 100-some booths sort of lay back and look at some great art and meet the artists. It's a juried festival, so there's really some terrific stuff there.
There really is, and I'm excited to go around. We're going to take a look at some of the booths and talk to some people. There's plenty of room to walk around. There's still actually some parking left in the lot.
Not anymore.
Filling up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And well, there's a little bit of fall in the air, which is, I think, appropriate.
Great. Well, Jeff will be there throughout the rest of the Saturday Light Brigade today, but also between noon and roughly 4 o'clock at the Children's Activities area, collecting stories from kids and showing off some digital recording equipment with Robert Gray. And Jeff, we'll catch up in a little bit. And thanks for being out there.
That sounds great, Larry. And I really like that last song you played.
Oh, I was thinking you would. That she wrote that verse from a male perspective only very recently. It's funny. She's a great New York-based singer-songwriter. We'll catch up in a little bit, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
That's Jeff Barron broadcasting from Mellon Park in Shadyside. Jeff's been with us, gosh, it's been nearly 3 years now, and I'm appreciative of him being able to allow us to be in two places at once this morning. And Jeff, with him, has somebody that makes prints by using wood blocks as the substrate on which to put the ink and then make the prints. And I've always been fascinated by this technique. Who's with you, Jeff?
We're here with a very talented man named Eddie Spaghetti. He's from Morgantown, West Virginia, and I was just blown away by this artwork. How you doing, Ed?
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Larry, who's on the radio right now, is just saying that he's always been fascinated by woodblock printing. So can you just explain a little bit the process?
Yeah. Well, first you get an image, and then you transfer it onto wood, you carve the piece of wood, the negative space is what's not going to print, and the positive space will print. And so then you ink it up and print it on handmade papers. That's about it, really. It's a lot more complicated than I just explained, but...
Well, I see, Larry, he has a description of how it works on a series of wood panels that have been carved in, and the way it's laid out to describe the process is a piece of art itself. Has anyone offered to buy that from you?
Oh, no. you know, people buy the artwork. That's fine. We trade, too, man. We trade chickens and things like that. You know, we really like that kind of thing about art. It's something from the soul, and, you know, sharing is an important thing in life. So
that's true. And I'm looking at this art, Larry, and there's a couple different... It's a lot of themes of nature.
Here's one that's pretty neat. Ullr, he's the Norse god of skiing, and you can take him for a little ride across the page here. You see, whenever you're in the middle of those hot summer days and you're just missing that winter snow, you take Ullr for a little ride.
That particular one is a framed portrait of a print with a little piece of the Norse god that you can move inside the frame. But I'm seeing a lot of different colors and a lot of designs of nature that to me look both beautiful and kind of scary at the same time. Scary or somewhat mystical in a way. Can you explain that?
Sure. Well, you know, nature is my inspiration. So some people who aren't familiar with being in the woods and things, maybe at night even, there's all that unknown out there, you know, so I can see what you're saying about that, yeah. But no, all my work comes from a loving place, though, ultimately, you know. I really want to spread that through my imagery, just the fact that nature will provide, and you got to give back by giving thanks. And, you know, my artwork is ultimately a thanks for the beauty of Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great sentiment, and I did not mean, don't get me wrong, I didn't mean scary, I actually meant, it's just detailed, and it's really beautiful, it's almost sublime to look at. So how are you inspired? You live in Morgantown, so do you live out in the country, does that inspire you?
Well, we live in a neighborhood, basically, but I mean, you know, that's my escape, yeah, the woods and the country, sure.
Excellent. Well, thanks for talking to us. And Eddie's booth is right here in the middle of the park, so I recommend if anyone's interested to come down and come see his work. Thank you, Eddie.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
All right, Larry, back to you.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff's got a great photographer with him. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hi, Larry.
Who's with you?
I'm here with Scott Davidson, a very talented photographer from up in Portersville near Moraine State Park. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning. We were talking. We came around the corner and saw some stunning black and white photographs of our fair city of Pittsburgh. And basically, the wind kind of, I felt like the wind got knocked out of me. It was so beautiful. Can you describe how you captured such a wide perspective?
Certainly. Yes, thank you. What we're looking at now are 3 6-foot-wide panoramic images of Pittsburgh printed on canvas. And each one of them, all 3 images were shot in infrared, and then they're stitched panoramics. Looking at the top one, for example, it's 10 separate images stitched together and then printed about 2.5 feet wide by or tall by 6 feet wide. From one of the overlooks on Mount Washington, looking across the Mond down toward town on a beautiful afternoon. What you notice, these images are black and white, and what the infrared does, it makes the foliage very light. It's often can be mistaken for winter foliage or early spring foliage, but the advantage is in each of these images we have a dramatic sky and the light foliage, and with an infrared technique allows that. With a conventional technique, the things we could do to get a dramatic sky like that would make the foliage darker and sort of, it would be an entirely different image in that way. So I've been doing this infrared for the last couple of years. I'm still very excited about it. I've been getting a good response. These large prints always catch people's eyes as they walk by, so it's fun to talk about. Of course, and Pittsburghers love to talk about Pittsburgh, so.
Yeah, we sure do. I mean, I can see on this one photo I'm looking at, you can see all the way on the Ohio, if your perspective was Mount Washington, you can see to the left, all the way up the Ohio, it looks like past Neville Island. And then on the right, you can see down past downtown off toward the hills above East Pittsburgh and Turtle Creek. And this isn't something that you could really see even with the naked eye. You'd have to turn your neck, but it's all captured here. We were just joking about how we'd love to hang this in our office.
We can work out a deal. Just you have my card.
Well, Jeff, I wanted you to ask if you could just clarify, because it flew by so quickly. These are they 3 10-foot panels, did I hear Scott say?
Scott, how large did you say they were again?
These are 6 feet wide.
Each
and,
six, okay.
The height varies, but it's from 2 foot to about 2.5 feet.
Oh, my goodness. So picture 2.5 feet by, like, 3 human beings, adult human beings long. That's incredible.
It really is. And as you were saying, the black and white photography really does some wonderful things to the trees. But, Scott, thanks for joining us. We appreciate this. Good luck.
Love the program, and it's a pleasure to join you this morning.
Thanks, Larry. Back to you.
Thanks, and thank you, Jeff. And now Jeff is going to be talking with somebody who does something absolutely remarkable. She paints the town red and blue and green and probably all sorts of other colors, too. Who's with you, Jeff?
I'm with Mary Lois Varilla, otherwise known as the Lady Who Paints Pittsburgh. Hi, Mary Lois.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And, Larry, just to give you a sense here, I'm looking at one of my favorite things, which is just different vistas and landscapes of Pittsburgh. And as everybody knows, this city affords remarkable views due to its unique topography. And I'm seeing some images that I've seen with my own eye in my life so far, but I'm also seeing some relics of the past. There's one here of East Liberty, the way it probably looked before they restructured it. But let's talk to the artist herself. Can you tell me how you got into doing this type of artwork?
Well, I've been doing this for 37 years. I started out as a flower painter and did a little bit of Pittsburgh. And the Pittsburgh scenes took off, and I just got to the point where I had no time to do flowers. And I became the Pittsburgh Lady. And the way I got my name was from the public. They'd say, oh, I'll meet you at the Lady Who Paints Pittsburgh booth, or you're the Lady Who Paints Pittsburgh. So they know me by that more than they know me by my name.
Well, now they know that you are Mary Lois Varilla, the Lady Who Paints Pittsburgh.
Right.
And how do you go about finding a something to paint, a vantage point to paint?
Well, as I said, I've been doing this a long time, and I would go out and take pictures, and I took pictures of the mills and the town, and now my photos and slides are so valuable that I have actually willed them to the History Center. They will get all the Pittsburgh slides and photos. The Steel Heritage Foundation will get all the steel mill, and the Trolley Museum will get the rest. And I've done it so long that now my things are historical.
Well, they are. I'm looking at one of the Cary Furnace right now, and you mentioned Rivers of Steel, and they're doing a tour of the Cary Furnace. Did you know that?
Yes. In fact, I think they have that print. I give them the prints.
Well, that one in particular is really special to me because my great-grandparents lived in Rankin, and I used to visit them and go out onto their porch and look out, and I used to see the Cary Furnace as a kid, and I thought I was in a different world. I didn't even know where I was.
Yes. Well, I have all the photos of all the old mills, and we only have, I think we have one left. No, we have two left, Clareton and E.T. That's all that's left. But I just enjoy going around and taking photos of, like, alleyways that could be anywhere in Pittsburgh. But it's fun when people come into my booth and they'll say, oh, my goodness, that's where I live, or that's where I used to live. And unfortunately, a lot of people now are buying gifts for people that have left Pittsburgh. And when they get them, they call me, and they're just absolutely thrilled with it to bring back their childhood memory. And the one thing I do as a payback is I do the holiday card for leukemia and lymphoma. So every year I do a new theme. This year it's the it's called Holiday on the Hill, and it's a scene up in the Hill District with the Civic Arena, the Mellon, in the background. And all the proceeds of that card goes to leukemia and lymphoma. You can order it through them.
Well, that's a great cause. We appreciate you doing that. Can you tell me, I'm looking at something right there that looks familiar. Can you tell me where that is?
That's the slopes of Southside with St. Michael's, which is no longer a church, and St. Paul's, which is a retreat center, and that's all the houses on the hill. So that's called the slopes, and then the flat land is called the flats.
Now, do you have a favorite viewpoint in Pittsburgh?
Oh, there's so many, and there's so many that people don't even know about. One of my favorites up in the Hill District, it's off of our, called Arsena Street, and it's right near where Conley Trade School used to be. And it's a great view of Pittsburgh. You see the old, and then there's a few Pittsburgh houses up there. I call them Pittsburgh houses. They were built in about the late 1800s with the dorms up there, and there's about two or three right there on the hillside. And you can get to see the city, and you see the stadium. It's a great view. My other view that I like is up off of, I forget the name of the street now. It's on the north side. I can't think of the name of it, but you get to see the 16th Street Bridge, and you see the Civic Arena, and you see the northern part of Pittsburgh. But there's a lot of views of Pittsburgh that are just beautiful. The one thing I went, like, people will come in my booth and they'll say, oh, where is that? And I say, are you a Pittsburgher? They say, yes. I said, well, you tell me where it is. If you live here, you should know where it is.
Here, here, I agree. And that would be a fun game because I encourage everyone to come and look at your paintings, but I also encourage everyone to go and drive around and see these vistas for themselves. Well, Mary, I appreciate this. Is there anything else you want to tell us?
Well, I just want people to observe their town and see how beautiful it is. I'm very proud of our town. We've come a long way. And the one thing I say is, I do a lot of the past. You don't have to live in the past, but you should respect it. So I try to honor the men and women that built our town to be what it is today.
Well, I agree, and I think that's another great sentiment. So not only are you a painter, but you also are somewhat of a historian and a philosopher, I would say. Thanks for joining us, Larry. Hopefully you'll get a chance to look at these paintings someday if you haven't seen them, because they're really beautiful.
I hope so, and thanks, Jeff. You really brought those to life, and we'll catch up with you in about 10 minutes or less or so, and we'll see who else is out there at a fair in the park. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
There are a lot of future artifacts and maybe even some current ones out at a fair in the park. Mellon Park in Shadyside, and Jeff Barron, our Director of Education and Outreach, is now there with Mike Mangiacico. And Mike is a glassmaker, is that right?
Yes, he is. He has a studio called Spig Studios. He also works at the Glass Center. And he's actually, right now, he's blowing. And what's the process you're doing right now, Mike?
What I'm going to do is pull a point out of this tube of glass. That pulling of a point is pulling a thinner handle for me to hold on to. And once I have a thin handle, then I can blow into that tube and inflate the glass, excuse me, and then put a bottom on the glass and then open up the mouth and make a... So what I'm doing is I'm making little bottles of glass.
You need a little sound effect here, Larry.
Yeah, I can hear that. That sounds like the gas that must be keeping the glass hot. Is that right?
It is. And Mike is being very generous with us because he's got his hands full and he's in front of a glass blower and the tent is full with people. But he definitely knows what he's doing. Does that get hot in your hands, Mike?
No, it doesn't. I get some radiant heat off the torch, but as glass is a good insulating material, the heat doesn't travel down the glass, and my hands stay cool.
Well, right now, he's actually stretching glass. Right in front of my very eyes, the glass went from a tube stretched into a tiny little straw with a bulb at the end. It almost looked like he was stretching taffy. And what's the process you're doing right now?
I'm cutting glass. I took the bubble that I blew previously, and while it was cooling down, I pulled that point that we were just talking about, and now I'm cutting the top off of this bubble, and I'm going to turn that into the mouth of my bottle.
And he's making right now some tiny little bottles that look like you could use for decoration or store some things in, and this is great. Pittsburgh's got a history of glassmaking, obviously, that's part of our culture here. Hi, thanks for joining us. I'll let you get back to your work.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks,
You're
Jeff.
Welcome.
That was fascinating. How is the scene there? Jeff is on the hillside at Mellon Park, right outside of Pittsburgh Center for the Arts. And, you know, this property you were mentioning earlier was part of the R.B. Mellon estate. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, there. I was always somewhat confused between R.B. Mellon and R.K. Mellon. And I believe that R.K. Mellon was his son. But R.B. was Richard Beatty Mellon,
mm-hmm.
who was the son of... Well, I think he was the nephew of Andrew, who became this Treasury Secretary, and I think he was the son of Thomas Mellon. Historians correct me if I'm wrong, but this is where their estate and their mansion was, and the grounds here are absolutely beautiful. For those in the Pittsburgh area who haven't been here, I completely recommend it. It's on par with beautiful parks such as Prospect Park in Brooklyn or Hyde Park in London. I mean, we're really lucky to have this kind of a landscape art here. So, and it's on top of a hill. I mean, I love coming up here because you basically look down, and there's so many trees now, but in the winter, you can see all of East Liberty, you can see French, you can see Garfield Hill, you can see across up the hills up above Lincoln and Leamington. So it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
Well, I took a look as we were talking, Jeff. Richard Beatty Mellon and Andrew W. Mellon were brothers.
Oh, okay.
And frequent business partners, which is really kind of fascinating. Andrew was appointed Treasury Secretary, as you pointed out. But there actually is an environmental award for R.B. Mellon that is given out, called the Richard Beatty Mellon Award, and it's given out by a group I used to be president of years ago called the Air and Waste Management Association, and now I remember why Richard Beatty Mellon rings a bell to me. I couldn't remember why, but they've been involved with the East Liberty Presbyterian Church endowments,
exactly,
to help that, and the Cathedral of Hope, and the beautiful park in which you now are. So hopefully we'll get to talk with maybe one more artist. You've been bringing such a rich cornucopia of artists and craftspeople with us. I can't wait to hear who we hear from next.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to say one more thing.
Sure.
If you're listening and you're on your way here, if you're listening here, a nice little walk you can do is you can start down at Bakery Square, where they have the new cafes and stuff, and you can pretty much walk through, woods and park area all the way up into Squirrel Hill, because you can go through Mellon Park, where the new Shenley High School is, across the street, come through this area of Mellon Park, and then jot across Shady Ave into the into Chatham's campus, which is just beautiful. We came through there today, and then you'll be up on Wilkins Avenue, and it's just a little shortcut if you want to spend the day walking around and seeing some of the beautiful architecture here in the East End. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, that's a good tip, and it will keep you away from what can sometimes be a little bit of a maddening traffic circle around the building there. There's not too many places to park at 5th and Shady, and so that would make – and today's a beautiful day, so it would be a great walk. Thanks, Jeff.
Sure thing, Larry.
And enjoying the scene at a fair in the park right now is Jeff Barron, and he has a woodworker from Valencia with him named Greg Savage. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Yeah, I'm here with Greg Savage, and got some amazing pieces of wood. And it was funny, my sister said to me the other day when we were at a thrift store, she found some wooden objects. She said, "Did you know wood's back in?" And I just rolled my eyes and said, "Wood never went out."
Yeah. I was going to say, I didn't think wood was discontinued.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if they reported about that in Time Out New York, but I think wood has always been in. And, Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Good. Let's start by talking a little bit about some of the things you have here and maybe why you got into working with wood.
Well, I built my house back in the late 80s, and once I started building the house, you start to acquire tools, and then you think, oh, I need to build this table or this piece of furniture. Then you start getting into more and more things, and you say, oh, what can I do with this tool? And I bought a lathe to make table legs, and then I discovered you can make bowls with that, and then I discovered burls, which make really cool bowls. And one thing led to another, and I started making with very expensive burl woods, making, you know, the product that I was making, and found out that it cracked. And I'm in a panic and trying to figure out how to patch up the crack and not have it look like it was patched. So I tried different methods, and they always looked like it was patched. And then I stumbled onto turquoise. So crushed turquoise was the shining light that opened up and said, hey, this is what you need to do. So now I search out imperfect woods and inlay crushed turquoise.
That's very interesting, and I can see that. You can see how these are bracelets, but there's also some bottle stoppers that are really beautiful that have a lot of inlays. And speaking of inlays, something that's made out of wood that has inlays are guitars here, and there's one hanging on the wall that you built. Can you tell us about that?
Well, a friend of mine and I started a small company within the last 2 or 3 months to sell guitars. I've been building guitars for about 10 years, and we figured it was about time, you know, to put them out to the public more. So we decided to take the burls that we had with the turquoise, because I haven't seen too much of that anywhere. So we took Jarrah burl, which is notoriously cracky and leaves you a lot of opportunity to inlay the turquoise or whatever other medium, because we've used copper, we've used malachite, Siberian jet. You know, a lot of minerals will work and some metals will work. And it just makes for an incredibly unique top for a guitar.
And how does it sound?
Sounds great. These go up to 11. If you're a Spinal Tap fan, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I am a Spinal Tap fan. I find myself quoting it a little too much. And actually, these knobs do, and Larry, I can't do a good British accent, but these knobs do go to 11, no joke. And you want to talk a little bit about the name of your company, or should we just wait for that to go public?
We could talk about it. We decided to call it Mars Guitars with Z's. You know, M-A-R-Z and Z at the end of guitars.
Because you're up from that area.
Yeah, I'm in Valencia, and my partner owns Mars Lumber, architectural millwork. And so between the two of us, you know, we've got the wood, we've got the knowledge, and the company hasn't rolled out yet. We've got the domain name, but we've got 4 or 5 prototypes ready to go, and lots of wood cut out for guitars.
It sounds like a good combination, and it's probably the only instance where you can use an axe to build an axe.
Clever.
You may have a slogan for the new company, Jeff.
Yeah, that might be a slogan for your new company.
I like it. We have to give you royalty on that, huh?
You can give me royalties, and I won't tell the Hoodoo Gurus that you stole their album cover name.
Never crossed my mind.
So, Larry, yeah, this is great. Greg Savage, and look for his guitars, and obviously come down here to Fair in the Park because there's some beautiful woodwork. Thanks, Greg. Thank you.
Okay, and Jeff, thanks for the great collection of artists you found throughout the morning, and I hope folks will come to see you and Robert Gray at the Saturday Light Brigade booth today only, starting in just about 20 minutes or so and continuing throughout the afternoon. Thanks, Jeff.